Bitcoin at its highest in more than a year. What will it take to mark the end of the crypto winter? And Hong Kong opens the door for retail trading. Welcome to I See Your Trade. I'm your host, Pamela Ambler. Soon we'll be joined by our special guest, Yat Su, co-founder and executive chairman of the multi-billion dollar blockchain gaming company, Animoca Brands. Then later, our resident expert, Oxford economics economist, Alex Holmes, to unpack the market. First, though, there's never a dull day in crypto. Despite an SEC crackdown, BlackRock is planning a Bitcoin ETF, and Hong Kong is welcoming retail crypto traders. I See Your Trade is brought to you by IC Markets, a leading high-performance trading provider. Trade up to IC Markets. Yeah, you're the co-founder of Animoca Brands, which has been based in Hong Kong since the very beginning. And so let's start there. What's your view on Hong Kong's regulatory change to allow now retail crypto trading?
Well, first of all, I'm really bullish about Hong Kong. If you think about what just happened in the last 6 to 9 months, Hong Kong has really progressed in terms of, you know, bringing people into the Web3 narrative. I just recently joined the Web3 task force that the Hong Kong government set up to basically bring forward the Web3 agenda. I think one of them, definitely a big thematic, is around, you know, Hong Kong wouldn't be doing what it's doing without the approval of, you know, China in this case. And it's also notable to note that when Hong Kong came out and spoke about the retail trading, also started giving out licenses to some exchanges in Hong Kong, Beijing released the Web3 white paper that basically discussed sort of how Web3 was going to be the next iteration of the internet strategically. And CCTV actually broadcasted about Bitcoin in Hong Kong in that same week. So, you know, interesting coincidence, shall we say? I think not. The thematic around that is one, for sure, there's an element of, I think, this whole sort of de-dollarization is something that is an underlying thematic, we think. We, for instance, believe that, you know, this is the beginning of the opening up, basically, of crypto, not necessarily in China, but basically to allow people ultimately in the mid to long term to, from China, to sort of invest in that asset class through Hong Kong. I mean, HSBC allowed for that to happen as well very recently, for instance. And also the Monetary Authority in Hong Kong basically also told the banks to start relaxing the requirements in terms of crypto companies to open bank accounts.
Right. Now, Hong Kong specifically, the Secretary for Financial Services says it's seeking to create predictable regulatory approach. So that is for digital assets. How will this change the industry overall? I imagine it will in a very big way.
It will be very significant. Hong Kong is one of the sort of financial capitals of the world. So not just because of liquidity, but also talent. Hong Kong also sees the opportunity that it has a unique perspective to offer because of the fact that it has a lot of financial professionals. But you also have to look at the background of Hong Kong. Many of, you know, the very first sort of crypto companies, you know, outside of our businesses, which is more NFT focused, actually originated out of Hong Kong, right? And then eventually they left because they didn't have that regulatory certainty. Whereas this company like Crypto.com, for instance, you know, even BitMEX, I think, and a whole bunch of other companies originated out of Hong Kong. And now they're basically trying to get everyone to come back to basically build, you know, the opportunity here. And it's also talent. If you believe that basically digital assets is the future of, you know, of money and the future of the financial services, then it makes sense to sort of bring up that talent base because it'll attract more people to come back to Hong Kong. Personally, I think this could be sort of the big renaissance that Hong Kong has been seeking for the last 5 years.
Well, now that open door policy in Hong Kong is a stark contrast to what we're seeing with the SEC in the US, the crackdowns recently. What do you think of Asia seemingly embracing crypto while the West looks to really be doing everything to kind of shut it down?
Well, let's just isolate the West specifically because it's really a US narrative. And also we think that this is mostly politically driven in terms of sort of, you know, I guess party politics from our perspective. Europe, for instance, isn't doing that, right? Outside of places like Switzerland, even sort of in the UK, even the EU with MiCA basically has come out with much more predictable crypto rules, for instance. So they've basically started to also become more open. And then there's the Middle East as well that is also becoming much more welcoming. And then, of course, Asia.
Malta.
Yeah. So I would say that, you know, taking away the US, the rest of the world is very much moving towards a sort of progressive forward Web3 agenda. And it goes back to the earlier topic I was saying, which is less dependency on the dollar, but also an avenue for technology companies to build new services and platforms that can serve essentially their own national interests with that of the world without sort of the dependencies of the US. I mean, if you think, for instance, that if you launch an app or if you launch a service, no matter where you are in the world, in most places around, you are entirely at the whim of a US technology company. You make an app, Apple, I guess, to say where they can exist. you sort of want to make a website, get discovered, and Google gets to decide whether you exist or not, for instance. You have sort of, you know, social influence, you know, Facebook or Instagram essentially gets to decide whether you have discovery. And that's basically entirely US companies. So I am not really surprised that there's so much goals and attempts to push Web3 in their sort of local countries. Take Europe, for instance. France has been very progressive in Web3 technologies. They're actually one of the, I would say, leading countries that are pushing the Web3 agenda forward. And, you know, if you had asked me 5 or 10 years ago that France would potentially be a leading technology center, I probably would have not believed it. But here we are, right? Again, because they see these opportunities that they couldn't have done before in Web2.
Decentralize it.
Correct.
And do you have any thoughts on where mainland China sits within this mix of things? Could Hong Kong be sort of an experiment before widespread rollout of digital assets in China? Of course, China has its own digital currency as well.
Yes. So first, I think the Web3 sort of strategy paper that Beijing put out puts it very clear that China wants to basically build out in Web3. What they're obviously more sensitive on, things like, you know, there was no mention of crypto, of course. And of course, I think the whole speculative side and trading side is something that China is naturally more wary on. However, the financial services aspect has always been Hong Kong's domain. When you think about it, not just in digital assets, but in past, whether it's sort of dollar, real estate, stock market, and so on, Hong Kong has always been the financial conduit in and out of China. So that we think will continue to operate. We also think that digital assets are actually going to become a fairly big thing in China over time, but on China's terms. When you think about sort of the way that the internet was governed inside China, probably one of the only countries in the world that can sort of create a effectively sort of walled internet, you know, with sort of, you know, permissioned access to the rest of the world, is China. And we think a similar approach is going to be taken in China. But again, it would only be something that would be in China, and the conduit to sort of export it would be Hong Kong, in our view.
And is there a big role that the digital yuan could play in all this?
I mean, I think there's certainly a hope that essentially a Chinese CBDC would have more global impact, although I don't think it will have as much of an impact as maybe some people might hope, partially because there is, you know, that is going to be a centralized currency, and it's going to be something that people will have difficulty trusting, other than the fact that, you know, on Belt and Road, maybe you'll have to use that and so on, and there's some policy around it. So it's understandable that there be adoption, but I don't expect it to be sort of super widely adopted. I mean, you see a certain distrust of technologies coming from China because of the fact that of the central control perspective. You know, large messengers like WeChat are very popular in the region, but have failed to penetrate in the Western markets precisely for that reason.
And it's not just Hong Kong, which has this crypto-friendly outlook. It's also here in Singapore as well. It's very much accepted, or at least tolerated. Now, the UK and Switzerland, as you mentioned earlier, are also in the pro-crypto camp. What makes these countries more accommodating to digital assets?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's about talent. It's about the future. It's about basically staying relevant. One of the major countries that actually has really gone forward on this is Japan, for instance, right? Prime Minister Kishida-san has made Web3 and the metaverse part of his national agenda. And actually, it's part of his sort of campaign platform, shall we say. They changed the tax laws most recently. I think Japan is still the very first country that actually put out an NFT white paper on a national level. They have a DAO working group, for instance, so they're really trying to push that forward. And also has a regulatory framework for actually even listing tokens in Japan. So, you know, all these places have one sort of thing in common, which is to try to be relevant in the Web3 space. Because when you look at even a place like Japan, what impact have they had in the Web2 world? Actually, very little. And places like that have their own intellectual property. And in this case, things like NFTs become really, really important for them because, again, they want their intellectual property to be protected. They want to sort of be relevant in the digital world. But these places are also very digitally native. Right? And it's not a surprise to us that places that have strong financial awareness and financial literacy, like Switzerland, like the UK, like Japan, like Hong Kong, like Singapore, are amongst the earliest adopters of this technology.
And speaking of NFTs, that's a big part of your business, non-fungible tokens. Now, the value of NFTs was about $41 billion back in 2021 and tracking lower again this year. Will NFTs stage a comeback?
Well, from our perspective, NFTs are the representation of digital property rights in Web3. So they are the foundation of it. Now, we don't think it's so important to think necessarily of what the valuation was like a couple years ago, because when you look at the trend line over the last five, in the case of NFTs or in crypto broadly, it has been steadily moving up, but it hasn't been steadily moving up because of sort of certain speculative value. It's because of actual user adoption. So the number of people that are owning NFTs today is larger. The number of people who are sort of using NFTs in smart contracts, in games, in applications is actually larger. But that doesn't mean that the NFTs have to be worth, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. That was sort of, I guess, a 2021 sort of cycle, shall we say, and can indicate where NFTs could go, but probably weren't necessarily realistic 2 years ago. That said, the use case for NFTs as digital property rights remains fundamentally strong. What makes it strong isn't its value, it's how value is shared. So last year, for instance, in, you know, a bear market, NFT sales overall and trading volume was about $24 billion. That's not bad. But actually what's really valuable is that 90% of that value went to creators and owners of these NFTs. In other words, the money that people made with NFTs was distributed throughout the entire user community. In contrast, one of the largest Web2 platforms in the world, Spotify, paid out $7 billion roughly in that same year. But the difference is that they serve hundreds of millions of users and serve millions more creators. And that's also the reason why people who are musicians can't make money living on Spotify, but you can make an income basically in the NFT world, even if you're a small company. So that's the reason why we're very bullish on NFTs, because actually the economics are fair, they're better, the incentives are aligned. And so long-term, we think that's just a much more sustainable level. People are much more willing to basically sort of go in the Web3 world because of the fact that they can just generate much more value.
So let's move over to the metaverse. That seemed to sort of take a back burner with Meta or Facebook in a very public way. But Apple's virtual headset now has put it back into focus. What's your timeline on the metaverse moving from the fringe into the mainstream?
So to us, Web3 and metaverse are very tied together. And specifically what I'm talking about is the open metaverse. When you're in the Web3 world, you don't even consider the Facebook version of the metaverse because it's a bit of a joke, frankly speaking. Not much has happened there and lots of money has been spent, but it's hard to compete with an open framework because it's a little bit like competing, you know, trying to have a closed software company compete with open source. At the end of the day, open source just has better network effects, more value is accrued through a larger number of people. And at the end of the day, you just can't compete with that, which is the reason why open source basically trumped over all sorts of closed source. And we see the same happening with an open metaverse versus a closed metaverse. And again, it goes back down to the value that's being distributed. Like the example I gave, 90% of the value that you make in the open metaverse goes to the creators and owners, whereas in a Facebook version, you know, more than something like half of it basically is shared with Facebook, which is not sustainable.
I see. Okay. Now, yeah, you started at Atari. You know about gaming, and the global gaming industry is worth about $200 billion now, but most of that is in Web 2. So can you explain why Web 3 is different and what sort of numbers are we looking at with Web 3?
So we're firm believers that gaming is going to onboard basically billions of users into Web 3. And the reason why is because gamers, even though they don't own anything, believe they should own it anyway. When you ask our kids who play Fortnite, that skin, did you know you rented it? That's actually what happens. But nobody says they're renting it. They actually think they should own it because that seems to be their natural sort of way of doing it. They also are accustomed to virtual currency because they're already spending, you know, different types of virtual currencies, whether it's on Roblox, whether it's on Minecraft, whether it's on Fortnite, for instance, and they spend it inside the game. So they've got that familiarity. So from our perspective, it's a sort of very natural sort of onboarding, and it's something quite fluid. Now, the other thing, of course, is that there's no network effects that can be built in the Web2 games. If you have a skin in Fortnite, you can only use it in Fortnite because actually it's not yours. But in a Web3 version of that, that skin actually is something that actually you not just own, but someone else can say, hey, I know that you own this Fortnite skin. Let me create a new experience. Let's call it Fortnite Fashion Week, for instance. And I can let people who have Fortnite skins experience it. And basically what happens is that through that ownership of skins, I have new network effects and it makes those skins have more utility as we do in the real world. For instance, today when you buy a car, you don't buy a car just because you can drive it from point A to point B. That's one utility. You buy a car maybe for status, you buy a car because it's comfortable, you buy a car because you like its color. You know, there's thousands of reasons why you choose to buy one car or the other, which is why we have so many different car brands and we have so many different designs, because they all mean something to us, right? But the designs and the elements that make those cars interesting comes from network effects built by third parties, right? For instance, baby seats, stereos, different tires, all that kind of stuff. The fact that you own an iPhone allows someone to make headsets for the iPhone, doesn't have to seek permission from Apple, or make cases for your iPhone, doesn't have to go to Apple and say, can I make this case, please? Which basically means that you have new networks and new economies that can sprung out just from your ownership of things. And in Web 2, you can't do that. But in Web 3, Now, everything you own in the digital world, you can do that. And we think gaming, because we already have so much ownership, there's 3.4 billion people who play games. They all interact with virtual goods, and moving virtual goods to actual virtual assets to us seems like the natural next step.
And it could have a very big monetary potential.
Well, the monetary potential we think of is very similar to how national economies that go from no property rights to actual property rights. So every country that actually has strong property rights and sort of democratic frameworks has very high GDPs, right? You know, places like the US or Canada, respect for property rights means more economic sort of growth and potential. Those countries that do not have respect for property rights, places like North Korea, for instance, and other such countries, have very low GDPs and generally are very poor. And we think the Web2 world is kind of like North Korea, in the sense that you don't have ownership in anything, which is also the reason why we as users in the Web2 world are literally worth only pennies on the dollar.
So what was it initially that sparked your interest in Web3 to start with?
It was NFTs. It started with CryptoKitties. We owned a studio in Canada called Fuel Power that actually helped construct, in part, CryptoKitties back in 2017. We're not sort of coming from the crypto lens back sort of from the Bitcoin maxis in the early days, because it was very financial in nature. It didn't speak to us that much. But when we saw NFTs, that's when we understood that NFTs could become containers of digital culture. And that was something that was more powerful for us, because from our lens, we think culture is much more human and much more scalable than just purely money.
Now, before we dive deeper, let's turn to Alex Holmes from Oxford Economics. So crypto obviously has had a very rocky run over the past couple of years. Can you take us through some of the history?
Yeah, it's been a real roller coaster. So at its peak, the crypto market was worth, in terms of market capitalization, about $3 trillion. So to put that into some kind of context, the FTSE 100, the 100 largest companies in the UK, current price is about $2 trillion. Obviously, that peak, it's come down from there. It started in early 2022, and the bear market really got started after the collapse of FTX late last year. And now it's around about a third of that value, about just over $1 trillion. That being said, crypto is down, but certainly not out. And prices have been rising again in recent months.
And obviously, Bitcoin is a big part of the crypto market. How much does Bitcoin contribute to the overall market size?
Yeah, so to walk you through, you've got Bitcoin, which is about 40% of the market cap. The next largest, Ethereum, is about 20%. And then what's interesting is the next largest tend to be stable coins. So these are tokens that are pegged in value to an underlying asset, usually the US dollar. And that touches on a really interesting trend of recent years. And that's the kind of mainstreaming or formalization of crypto. For instance, you've got central banks that are really seriously looking into central bank digital currencies and the kind of role that they might play in the future global financial system. And you've got countries like Iran and Russia, they're launching a gold stable token to conduct bilateral trade in. So that really feeds into one of the really hottest topics in economics at the moment, and that's the de-dollarization of the global trading system. And some people are touting crypto as one possible alternative to US dollar hegemony. It's a massive topic and too big to cover at the moment, but suffice to say that crypto is still attracting interest from new parties and new places.
Thank you very much, Alex. So to wrap things up, Animoca Brands Japan has just teamed up with Honda Motors for an engagement. Can you explain how this partnership is going to work?
Well, we're very excited about what's going on with Honda. And generally, Animoca has made quite a bit of investments in the motorsports area, you know, with MotoGP and Formula E. And together with Honda, we would be looking at bringing in something like close to 500 million users, hopefully, onto Web3 with these partnerships. We've been also very fortunate that Japan has been very forward in Web3. Some of our key strategic shareholders in Japan are companies like MUFG, and you know, Mitsui most recently also made an investment in Animoca to basically help push forward the Web3 agenda. And hopefully we can build a very fun experience for all the Honda fans out there.
Well, it's been a fun conversation with you, Yat. Thank you very much. A big thank you to our special guest, Yat Su, co-founder and executive chairman of the multi-billion dollar blockchain gaming company, Animoca Brands, and to our resident expert, Alex Holmes from Oxford Economics. Thank you both. At least for now, crypto is back with a vengeance. Will it stay on the fringe or move to the mainstream? The blockchain bugs are out in force, but the detractors are still trying to tie up the industry in red tape. One thing for sure, it's not going away anytime soon. Thanks for tuning in to episode 9 of I See Your Trade. I See Your Trade is brought to you by IC Markets, the leading high-performance trading provider. Trade up to IC Markets. Thanks for joining us today, and we look forward to seeing you next time.